I'm Paul Danis with GreatDad.com, and I'm here on my weekly series talking to dads. And today I've got a really interesting and kind of a different topic. I'm meeting today with Fernando Diaz. Welcome, Fernando. And Fernando is the head of an adventure travel company called Quasar Expeditions. And we're going to talk specifically today about the Galapagos as a family destination and how that might work in your travel plans. And I was selfishly really interested in this interview because I have not yet been to the Galapagos. It's on our list of things to visit. And so I'm excited to learn from you about the ins and the outs. So thank you for joining us.
Welcome. Thanks, Paul. Yeah, I'm happy to be here, share my experience with the Galapagos, you know, first as a kid, the son of actually the founders of Quasar Expeditions. My two parents were second generation. So I've experienced the Galapagos as a child and now as a father, and really speak to the benefit from both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, and you've got little kids. You've got a baby, 8 months old, and a 6 and an 8.
Exactly.
So you're right in the sweet spot of knowing how a Galapagos trip might be tailored to those kids, or whether it's even the time is right for a trip. I mean, we've gone on family trips where we went on one family trip to Vietnam and Cambodia, where I just decided too dangerous for the kids because we were going to be on a boat, and just, I knew they'd love it and it would have been great to have them there. And I miss them every day for having the experience without them, but I didn't want to spend, you know, every waking moment thinking, are they we'll get into that. But first of all, I wanted to get the one elephant in the room out of the way, because you do hear about ecotourism. We hear a lot about how negative cruises are for the ecosystems, especially in the Galapagos, the big ships. What is your take on that? And what kind of tourism is the Galapagos, are they currently recommending? I always know there's an economic factor. Everybody wants the tourism money, but they don't actually want the tourism waste and destruction. So give me your take on what's going on there.
Exactly. So, well, it's worth noting that, for example, you know, when my parents first started this in 1986, there was only one other company offering tours in the Galapagos. But in their mind, and I think they were right, tourism was really the way to preserve these islands, right? Well, the ideal way would be to leave him alone and just leave him isolated. Sure. Right. But there were already people living there. There was already fishing going on there, a little bit of commerce and things like that. But they really saw that the way to protect these islands is to show them to the world and show what this fragile ecosystem really needs. So I know it's like a double-edged sword, right? There's good and bad for tourism, you know, the positive elements of bringing people, you know, to see a place like this, and obviously the negative impact that tourism can have, waste management, and cruise ships, of course. Cruises are the best way to see the Galapagos, but there's one important distinction with like cruising in Galapagos versus other destinations. Is these are expedition cruises and they are small ships. So the impact that they have on a destination, it's not like, you know, you're offloading 1,000 people into a visitor site. The largest ships are 100 passengers and the smallest are 8 passengers. Quasar is on the small end, you know, 16 to 32. But it is a question that people ask themselves. My recommendation is go see the Galapagos, because your contribution there, you know, the companies that operate there need to pay for their licenses to the Galapagos National Park. The National Park protects the species. They protect the islands. So this is the way to keep the Galapagos as pristine as possible versus, you know, maybe the one of the alternative, which was basically impossible to isolate them. So tourism is the next best thing, but it has to be responsible and sustainable tourism. And there's a choice that people can make when going to Galapagos.
Yeah.
Choose to go with the companies that are friendly there.
Yeah. So is that a distinction that you should just look for in the choice of a cruise line, that they say eco-friendly, or would you just say boats that are over 200 people, you know, just pick a number, are
friendly? Exactly. The 100 passenger boats that are the largest in Galapagos, they are the equivalent of maybe the 1,000 passengers to another destination, because the visitor sites are so fragile and small that, you know, these larger ships, I would stay away from those when it comes to leaving, if you want to leave a lighter footprint. And then the next thing is really do your homework to research what a company is doing, you know, in the islands. and ask whenever you talk to salesperson, say from a company, ask what the company sustainability agenda is. Unfortunately, there's a lot of greenwashing going on and people saying they're eco-friendly when they're really not, but you'll clearly notice when they're not, if you ask the right questions. Tell me about the projects. And at Quasar, for example, everybody's aligned from our sales team to general manager to the cabin boys to the barman. Everybody knows the company's ability. That's something you'll notice.
Yeah, I really urge people to reach out to a company like yours because it sounds like you do have actual conversations with your potential clients and give them advice. Latin America, I used another company called Peru for Less, and I was just really impressed at how much information they were willing to give me without even booking the, eventually we did book with them, but they were so responsive on just giving just general advice. And it sounds like that's part of your mission as well.
Exactly.
I appreciate
it. In the end, it's all about the destination and protecting the destination. So this happens often, the people approach us wanting to go on our trips and we actually tell them we're not a good fit for them. You know, they're focusing just on the luxury of the boat and that's all they care about. And maybe a butler like Silver Sea offers you a butler service in Galapagos, but we're not about that, right? We're about the experience and protecting the destination. So that's how we, steer people into our kind of experience. And some are just not a right fit. So you have to know which battles, to choose. And we don't accept just everybody that's an advantage to having, such a small operation.
So would you say in general, the cruises that you're doing are better for, Silver Seas would be clearly for somebody older and maybe potentially less active. Are your cruises more geared toward like a younger family, kids and a lot of stuff during the day?
Yeah, we actually do share, demographics with Silver Sea as well. But I would say that they're more for the people who really focus on the ship. But what happens in Galapagos is that you're really on the ship to have your meals and to sleep. The rest of the time, it's all about the exploration. Right? These are expedition cruises. So we cater to people of all ages and stages who want to really experience the Galapagos and immerse themselves in the Galapagos. So the age doesn't really matter for us. But yes, generally, people who really like activity and wildlife and, these are not strenuous. Cruises that are active only for athletic people. They're for everybody, but you have to have that mindset, right? It's not about the nightly entertainment on the ship or the butler, as I said.
Right.
It's about the experience off the ship.
Right. Yeah. So in terms of kids, what age would be the youngest you would consider it being valuable to go on a trip like this? 6 to 8 is obviously they would probably have a lot of fun, but would they get as much out of it as maybe waiting until they're preteens or teens?
Yeah. So I was 4 years old the first time I visited the Galapagos. And believe it or not, those are the first memories that I have.
Oh, wow.
It was like the interaction with the animals. So I do remember, sometimes people say, you're not going to take into this place because they're not going to remember. It depends on the impact that, the destination or the trip has on the child. So I was 4 and I remember. But I would say that the ideal age for kids is as soon as they can swim, by themselves,
okay,
unassisted, and they can wear a snorkel, they're ready. They're ready for Galapagos. And of course, teenagers is fantastic. They can do absolutely like every activity. We have stand-up paddle boarding and kayaking, for example. That's maybe not an option. Well, the two-person kayaks would be an option, for like an adult and a child. But all ages, but as I said, from the age your child can swim comfortably. And we provide, life vests that are special for snorkeling for kids. But if they're comfortable wearing a mask and breathing through a snorkel, they're ready to go. They'll have the trip of a lifetime. And by that time, by that age, they'll remember it.
Yeah. I love that advice in terms of what they can do and when they can actually take advantage of the situation. We traveled with our kids from infancy all the way up until they're now 19 and 23, and we still travel with them. But we ourselves got so much more out of all of our trips. Yeah, we didn't do as many adult things when they were, 4, 6, 8, we had to schedule our programs around them. But I would imagine seeing the Galapagos, even if it's your first time, but seeing it through a child's eyes, it has got to be a magical experience, even, versus being an adult and being able to do far more of the activities, but missing out on that childish wonder.
It is 100%. You know, what children learn and see in the Galapagos stays with them forever. We've had kids write to us, you know, in their college years, they telling us, you know, that they actually traveled with us in the Galapagos when they were 8 years old, and now they're studying marine biology or something like that. It really makes a difference. And it makes a difference so much that, you know, that's how the company started. My mother was just 16 when she visited the Galapagos for the first time. And that trip impacted her so much that she, the rest of her life, she basically spent trying to figure out how to make the Galapagos a permanent part of her life until she met my father. And he was an entrepreneur, and they started this cruising business, and she found how to do it. But between that time and they started Quasar, so maybe about 16 years, a period of 16, 17 years, that was her mission. So that's how impactful the Galapagos can be. And just for all ages, the thing about, you know, experiencing them before you're an adult is that brain is a lot more malleable, right? And conservation sticks a lot harder. The responsibility that we have towards our planet, towards the wildlife, it just makes it so much more impactful on young kids. So it's a perfect destination.
Yeah, it brings to mind the fact that as you're planning family travels, I mean, everybody has different values in terms of how they want to go about raising their kids and what they want them to be, how they want them to learn. And there's certainly nothing wrong with having a simple beach vacation if that's the way you get the family together and have a, you know, really close, intimate time. But as a lifelong value, if one of your values is lifelong learning or preparing for academics or trying to develop these values of conservation, respect for the planet, this type of trip is just, can be just so life-changing, especially for a child in the way they look at the world. It'd be just their response to a course on evolution, for example, would be totally changed had they, you know, been to the Galapagos, had heard about Darwin, walked in his footsteps, seen the tortoises and everything. I can imagine how that would affect a child or your mom.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, on our family cruises, whenever families are on board, we always put at least one of our family-friendly guides. You know, they are parents themselves. They're extremely good with the kids. They're very patient. Their lectures and the way they interact with the kids is very different from, say, the other guide is more, you know, gearing the expedition towards the adults. So, you know, everything is done perfectly for the age at which, you know, you visit the Galapagos. And, you know, today as a father or as a parent, I actually think, you know, destinations I want to take my kids to today are probably the ones that will require the least amount of work. You know, I don't want to take them somewhere where I feel like I'm a full activities coordinator every single day where I have, you know, where I come back from the vacation needing another vacation. Exhausted trying to entertain the kids. That's the fantastic thing about the Galapagos. The kids are entertained from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to bed. Everybody checks out early because you're active from very early morning. Wildlife is super active in the early hours. So it is early wake up, you know, like 7 a.m. My kids are up at 6:30. So for them, you know, that's not a problem. But, you know, you're snorkeling, you're kayaking, you're doing walks and hikes. You're exploring all day. So, you know, kids need to waste that energy that they have accumulated. And the Galapagos is perfect. So as a parent, you're actually there. The crew is taking great care of the kids. All right. So you don't need to be worried about them all the time. Flora's Club, you know, watching, you know, occasional documentaries on board and things like that. You also get to enjoy your time. And it's a win for everybody. Everybody's equally entertained. And, you know, everybody is just equally happy at the end.
Yeah, that's one of the pleasures of cruises. And I got to get into the whole big cruise, you know, that whole footprint part. But the part where there is a lot of activities and parents and kids can choose how much time, or, you know, bigger families can choose how much time they spend with each other, is really quite liberating for a lot of families. And if you can let them have their little activity while you're doing something else and then come back together. So yeah, what exactly is the best, what is the best season to go?
So the great thing about the Galapagos is that because they're right on the equator, weather doesn't really vary much throughout the year. So as opposed to other destinations that are seasonal, Galapagos is year round. Now, there is a season that we refer to it as the secret season, and that's from September through November. And the reason we call it the secret season is because most people call it low season because there is less demand. But that's the only difference between that time of the year and other. So because, let me explain, you know, 60% of international tourists coming to the Galapagos are from North America. September through November is the time of year when North Americans travel the least, right? It's right after the big summer vacations and right before the holidays. So at this time of year, there's less demand. You'll likely find discounts. Your park isn't as crowded and you get the same weather. None of the wildlife in Galapagos migrates. You know, one bird, the albatross, that is actually present at that time of year. In terms of wildlife, you won't miss a thing. In terms of weather, it's fantastic. Snorkeling is actually the best of any time of year between September and November. So that's really a magical time. Now, this is about families. And of course, maybe it's hard. Maybe fall break might be a possibility. But then, you know, certainly offer the summer, the North American summer, June through August. That is a perfect time of year. You'll find other families on board so the kids can actually enjoy the company of other kids and parents of other parents, very like-minded groups. So anytime is a good time of year to go if you're looking to save a little bit of money, you know, September through November. And of course, if you're looking for perfect time for families on board, that would be June through August.
Yeah, I encourage people also to consider taking their kids out of school for a week. I mean, especially on a trip like this, it's one thing to take them to Hawaii or Florida or something during the middle of school and having them miss out. But this kind of educational experience is worth, you know, 4 weeks in school if you're able to give them this experience during the September.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because what they learn in that 1 week, the equivalent of what they learn, you know, an entire semester or year in their biology.
Yeah, especially for these earlier ages, obviously it gets more complicated when they get into high school and it is very, a lot more, you know, what you're learning. I mean, yeah. I'm sure everybody would say, don't let them fall behind in, you know, whatever the math class is. But I think they can catch up if they're offered this type of.
Yeah, exactly. I was on board with a family once. I was doing some filming, you know, for a video that we were doing. And the teacher, he was maybe, I think, like 10 or 11. The teacher said, you're good to go as long as you can, you know, you come back with a report on what you saw. And this kid together, coolest presentation with photos, with videos, he wrote down what he learned in the lectures, and you know, it was a project in itself, and that's an amazing opportunity. You know, yes, they might miss out on school, but they'll get a year or a lifetime for natural history education.
Yeah. So the Galapagos given that they're out on the equator, there's no effect of climate change. I mean, more and more people are saying, I don't even travel to Europe anymore in the summer because it's so ridiculously hot that it's unbearable, but it's pretty stable there.
Yeah, it's extremely stable. Right now you have a little bit of the influence of El Nino. So the waters are warmer and the temperatures are a little warmer than usual. But other than that, it's pretty stable, you know, and very comfortable weather. These are volcanic islands. So yes, you know, there are some visitor sites that are purely volcanic, like you're literally walking over a solidified lava field. And so, you know, with the sun rays, it's kind of like walking on an oven. So maybe that visitor site can be a little hot, but it will be hot any time of year. But in general, you know, the afternoons are nice and cool. You know, with a t-shirt, you can be outside. And what we do is, because Galapagos weather is so pleasant, our ships actually keep you outside as much as possible. Under the shade, plenty of outside space. Other ships, you know, they lock you in behind smoke glass to look at the beauty of Galapagos behind. You know, this black smoke glass. We want to get you, you know, outside in right touch with the elements, and the things you actually see right off the ship are just fantastic. So we don't want the thing.
I'm ready to go. So with that, in terms of timing for prepping a trip like this, I'm sure there are last minute deals to be had, but how far in advance do most families plan this trip out?
Yeah. So families normally start to book the summer right after the holidays. So January, February, that's when a wave of bookings come for the summer. So if you're planning a Galapagos vacation, I would encourage to plan as far out in advance as you can. But if you're, you know, January or February for summer would be ideal. And then if you want to travel during Christmas and New Year's week, those are the two most popular weeks of the year in Galapagos, and those sell out like a year in. So for us, at least, you know, Christmas 2024 is already sold out. You'd have to look at Christmas 2025. Wow. So plan ahead if you want to travel at that time of year. And if you want to travel in the summer, start in January, February, and you'll be guaranteed enough spaces and on the right dates.
Okay. And then if you want to take advantage of that secret season, when would you plan for that?
Around the same time frame, I would say between March, April, and May. That's normally the 3 months when that secret season sort of fills up. People yeah. normally book a Galapagos trip 4 to 6 months in advance. There's a lot of sort of like planning that has to take place, you know, international flights, domestic flights, packing, you know, schedules and things like that. But that's a general recommendation. If you're booking, you know, 6 months out in Galapagos, except for Christmas and New Year's, you'll be fine.
Okay. And then is there any kind of physical or other kind of preparation you would recommend? We've gone on trips where, you know, there's a lot of climbing, for example, and if you're kind of, you know, get your legs in shape, get your stretches in, like you prepare for a ski vacation, is there anything like that you'd prepare for?
Yeah, no, not in Galapagos. The only thing I recommend is like when kids are young, if they're comfortable swimming, just the preparation is having swim in, you know, have them swim in the pool with a snorkel and fins. Okay. And if they're comfortable doing that, that's all the preparation you need. Galapagos is a soft adventure. You can, you know, these are light walks and hikes. Nothing strenuous for anybody. So this is for somebody from, you know, 5 years old to 95. Right. Do every single.
Yeah, I don't see any mountains there in the background.
No, no, it's all pretty much like that.
Okay, and then in terms of pricing, what is the range from all the way from?
Yeah. So yeah, that's a great question. Well, one, the Galapagos is an expensive destination, regardless of like the cruise category that you book. These are remote islands. Everything has to be flown in from the mainland. Even, you know, there's no electricity. There's no way to generate electricity in the Galapagos other than, you know, petroleum powered generator, right? So you can imagine the cost of bringing the fuel from the mainland, just extrapolate that to pretty much everything. And so pricing goes up forever. So the Galapagos are considered an expensive destination. You can find, you know, budget cruises, which would be the equivalent of like a one-star to two-star hotel. Those normally start at around like $200 to $250 per person per night. Then you go to the mid-range cruises. Those are around, you know, $250 to about $400. Then you have the first-class cruises. Those go between like $400 and $800. And then the luxury cruises are $800 plus, you know, per person per night. Now, these prices are all inclusive, at least on the luxury category. They include like national parks, all meals, all excursions. Really, the only thing you pay for once you're in Galapagos tips the crew and staff, but everything else is.
Okay. All right.
And sorry, and I didn't mention the duration. There are cruises between 4 nights is the shortest. Sorry, 3 nights is the shortest and 14 nights is the longest. Quasar offers 7-night and 14-night cruises only. We believe 7 nights is the minimum amount of time required to really see the Galapagos. And also think about the fact that just getting to Galapagos is like a full day and coming back is a full day. So if you book one of those 3 or 4 night cruises, you're really only spending 2 full days in the Galapagos. Right. That's a long way and price to pay just to spend.
Right. And then when you look at the choice of the cruises, I've done a little bit of research on this, and sometimes there are certain ports that are, you know, on one cruise schedule and then not on another. What are the must-see things, like if you're looking at different destinations that you would say, you got to have these, you know, 3 or 4 places on it, or, you know, you should choose a different cruise?
That's a great question. And that depends on the experience and the expertise of the company doing the cruise. So while the Galapagos National Park determines, you know, all the visitor sites that you can or cannot visit, luckily for Quasar, we have been around for 37 years, you know, the second oldest cruise operator. So we were around at a time when you could actually pick the itineraries and the islands fully. All right. So what happened there was that our itineraries are extremely well balanced in terms of islands. There is no one itinerary that is better than the other. They're just different. Well, I take that back. The best itinerary is the 14-night itinerary, But in general, what it is, it's a compilation of 2 7-night itineraries. So the more time you spend in Galapagos, the better. But in terms of the highlights, we realize that most people can't visit, you know, a place like Galapagos for 14 nights. If you can only do 7 nights, Quasar's itineraries are very well balanced out, and you'll have an equally time. You'll see the main species, you know, penguins, the giant tortoises, you know, the blue-footed boobies, the sea lions, the sea turtles. Those are present all around. Maybe the one animal that is only present in one itinerary is this bird that I talked to, the waved albatross that migrates. That one only lives in one island. But for most people, unless you're a bird watcher, they don't really care about that stuff. So it depends on your interest. Now, you're not going with Quasar, for example, questions you need to ask, just look at the itinerary and find a company that just doesn't focus on the central island. Because normally the companies that just focus on the central islands, it's to save money on fuel costs and to keep people close to the ports to be able to break up their itineraries. So they do this more for, you know, the benefit company and the economy of the company rather than, you know, the advantages of the guests. So if you find an itinerary that goes to like the northernmost islands, the southernmost, easternmost, westernmost, that's where you'll find the best stuff in Galapagos, because those are the islands that are far removed from the visitor site. So they have had less impact on humans. They're more pristine. Evolution has had more time to work on, you know, those islands. So keep that in mind. Just go for an itinerary that visits the islands, you know, in the extremes of the archipelago.
Well, this just sounds so exciting. I'm just, my mouth is watering for a trip to visit, because it has been on our list for a while. And you make it sound so much more accessible, and taking some of that fear of, like, I really felt a lot of guilt in looking at it and like, what, you know, how much destruction we'd be wreaking on the thing that we're actually trying to respect and, you know, and love. So I always finish these conversations. There's a little bit different since we're talking travel, but on with these three questions that I told you about beforehand. And maybe you could give us some of your advice. So the first one is, you got young kids right now. I'm sure you've got a lot of experience already, 8 years of being a dad. What lesson have you learned from being a dad, or what lesson would you tell, you know, fathers to be, or fathers of real little kids?
That's a great question. And for me is, you know, always try to work on patience. You can never have too much of it, kids, and you can often have too little of it, right? Kids require a lot of patience at all ages and all stages of their life.
Yeah.
I try to exercise to help with that, because it's not always easy. And lack of sleep definitely doesn't help, you know, with the patience thing. But, you know, kids definitely appreciate, you know, when you're working on that patience. And
I love that you say that, because we're all fallible. We all lose our, you know, our temper. We all get frustrated, and there's that temptation to lash out, or that just that impulse to lash out. But trying to keep that in mind is really key, especially with little kids. And then the second one, maybe, and this is related, is having a mantra. A lot of people have a mantra that they keep on, something in their head that they keep on saying that maybe keeps them patient. Like, you know, I'm not going to blow my top, or I'm not going to say what's on my mind.
And this was, it's very much related. I forgot where I heard this. It was in a podcast, but I forgot which one. It was, you know, 20, 30, 40 years from now, looking back on the, like, this exact moment that you're about to like explode, you know, would you react the same? You're in your deathbed, you know, you would probably treasure, as much as that moment might be stressful, might be, you know, a hard moment. It's just appreciate every moment, but just think, don't get stuck there, you know, in the present, and just the exact situation right there. Think about, you know, in the future, looking back on that as your older self, would you do the same thing? And most of the time, you know, the answer, have more patience, I'd react about this differently. It's hard to think about that, you know, when you're super stressed, but it's all a habit. Today for me, you know, when I'm overreacting, I start noticing that immediately. Mind, and definitely helps.
Yeah, I think that's so important, because a lot of some of my most painful memories as a, you know, an older person now, about relationships with my parents are about the, you know, they were super patient. They were wonderful parents, and we had our ups and downs, and, you know, not having money and all kinds of other things along the way. But I don't remember that as negatively as I remember just a few occasions where they just blew their top about something that now, like you say, 50 years later, completely meaningless. And if they knew that I was going to remember it that far into the future, they would, you know, they would have been appalled. They made such a big fuss. But it's usually around kids breaking things, right? They break something, sentimental value or something that's valuable, and your immediate reaction is to get upset. But the kids do remember that, especially if you use a profanity or call them names about it. It's in my personal memory. Okay. And then the final question is, and maybe this is related to, you know, to planning out your trip, is if you could give dads like a challenge for the next week, either try to be more patient or maybe get this planning in the works.
Yeah. So if I could give dads maybe a tip of advice, one would be, and this, you know, I was a victim of this. It's just like working too much with the excuse that I'm doing this for the kids, right? Or for the family, because the only ones who are going to remember that you worked those extra hours 10 years from now is not your boss. It's your kids, right? And your wife. So that's one big tip that I can give people, is just, you know, realize there's needs to be a balance, you know, between quality time, like with the family, and the reason why you do these things. Yep. And maybe the other tip is, you know, as it relates to like planning, you can tell I'm a patient guy. It's, you know, patience with planning for the holidays. There will be family involved. There will be lots of elements. Just talk with the wife and the kids, set the expectations right, get everybody on the same page. And, you know, when people's expectations are met or surpassed, it's wonderful, but you need to talk about these expectations, right?
Yeah.
Whatever you do, whether it's a trip or whatever, so that nobody comes, you know, to the place with the wrong expectations. That's what
like the dad who plans the trip during the kids, whatever, football season or something, and is so excited about giving them this incredible gift, and all they can think of is, oh, you stole this other thing that I was really planning for. So getting that out on the table and make sure everybody, all the stakeholders, know what they're getting into, and they're all as excited as you are.
Exactly.
Great. Well, this has been just a really a fun conversation and off my usual beat. And it makes me want to have more conversations about travel, because it does get me excited. We've had some of the best family memories and experiences together. It pulls families together in a way that is harder to do just through other types of experiences. So I really 100%. Recommend if you can afford this type of trip, it's a really incredible gift. And the website is Quasar X. So Quasar, like the star X for expeditions.com. /Galapagos, if you want to look at the Galapagos. We'll put that in the show notes to make sure that people can find that. And I assume that there are operators standing by who can chat with people if they're interested in the trip.
Yeah, exactly. And the great thing about our operators, you know, if for some reason you're not the right fit, whether it's for like budget or timing or whatever, we'll direct you to the best place, book, you know, the perfect vacation for you.
Yeah.
We're here to help. We want to spread the word on.
Okay, that's really fantastic. Anything last words that anything we didn't cover that you think dad should know?
I think that covers it. You know, the Galapagos, there's no better place in the world for children and adults alike to safely get close to animals in the wild. Like we like to say, it's like an African safari, except none of the wildlife sees you as their dinner. So only magical things can happen when you can interact that way. So I encourage everybody, just give that a chance, put it on your bucket list. Maybe it's not for today, not for tomorrow. Maybe it's for a trip, you know, 20 years from now, but just keep it in your bucket list and make it your mission to visit the Galapagos. You'll thank me one day.
Great. Okay. This has been really great, Fernando. Thank you very much, Fernando Diaz, for joining me today. For you, those of you interested in my coaching, you can find me at greatdad.com/coaching. And there's a offer for my course on gratitude, which I'm very grateful today for having you. At greatdad.com/gratitude, and podcast listeners can get 20% off if they enter the code gratitude or podcast when you sign up. So thank you very much. Until next time, take care.